to this final hour on this Tuesday edition of the Hagman Report. Each and every Tuesday in the last hour, we are joined by Stan Deo. His website is standeo.com. Now, Stan has had the last few weeks to recover from a surgery he had that, from when I was talking to him earlier, I guess it was pretty successful. He said it was able to get rid of some pain that he had for a number of years. Stan, it's great to have you back. Great to have you back on the show.
Good to be back, and you're right. I do feel like bending over and touching my toes and all kinds of things I couldn't do for a long time, for, I guess, my biggest part of 22 years.
Well, that's fantastic.
Man, that's great.
A lot of your listeners emailed me and said, you know, during the time I was off and a little bit before that, that they were praying for my recovery and stuff and health, and I'm sure that those prayers, were effective, and we were able to find a surgeon that would actually perform what they call exploratory surgery and get into my area under the ribs there, and she was able to immediately locate the problem and cut it out, and the next day I felt like a million bucks. But I've had to take it easy, not do heavy lifting, that kind of stuff. I've still got a couple of weeks on restricted activity, but I feel great, so thank the Lord for that.
Well, that's wonderful, Stan. You can't beat that, especially after as long as you said you were dealing with the problem to have taken away after all these years. It's gotta make you feel good.
Yeah, look, I fell out of a tree when I was cutting some stuff, and my ladder broke under me, and so I fell off the top of the ladder, and as it was collapsing, and fell on my side to protect my neck. I put my arm under my neck and head there, and anyway, it protected the neck, but it kind of caused my body to bounce up. The head and the feet bounced up and kind of compressed the rib cage and fractured a rib, and they didn't think it was worth, the doctor didn't down at that time, worth draining out the blood that formed under my ribs. There was a big pouch of blood from the breakage, and I just leave it, it'll be absorbed, it'll be all right. Well, years passed, and it got worse and worse and worse, and I couldn't get a surgeon to get in there and fix it. They just didn't want to perform exploratory, and finally this lady up in the Springs, she's good surgeon. She said, look, I'll do it. Darn if she didn't find it, and so I was so pleased.
That's great, Stan. Well, we just got done with the solar eclipse, looking at the show images page. Folks, go to standeo.com. On the right-hand side, on the right-hand side of the mic, on the right-hand side of the page, there's a button that says show images, and you can follow along with what Stan's talking about. He puts his research and findings there for us on the shows each Tuesday. So where do you want to begin tonight, Stan?
Well, the eclipse is kind of current in most people's mind. You know, they were all worried about earthquakes and stuff and splitting America in half and all that kind of stuff. And I've compared the 7 days before the last 7 days, in other words, over the last 2 weeks, the earthquake map summarizing week at a time from the 8th to the 15th of August compared to the 16th to the 23rd. Of course, some of the earthquakes are called 23rd now because on that side of the planet we're getting earthquakes, so that really means today. But if you'll click on that image 50 right at the top of the page, you'll see up at the top the earthquake patterns across the lower 48 a week before last. And you'll see earthquakes in the New Madrid region there. You'll see earthquakes in Oklahoma City around all the fracking's taking place. You'll see them in California in those little pathways of mountains and fault lines that go up, the west coast there and inland toward Yellowstone. Now, scoot down the bottom part of that image, and you'll see this week, after we've had the eclipse, well, you see the same earthquakes in the New Madrid region. You see the same earthquakes over on the west coast and up the mountain range toward Yellowstone. So, at the moment, I'm saying that, the earthquakes in the United States, anyway, weren't triggered by that. But we do know that after an eclipse like this, a solar eclipse, total eclipse, that historically there have been, within, say, 8 days to 2 weeks, significant earthquakes, but not, always under where they pass. They would be like 50, 60 miles either side of the path that the eclipse shadow was forming. And so I'm reserving, complete dismissal of the effect until we see what happens over the next week to 2 weeks. But immediately as of, today,
Yeah, there was a lot of hype with this eclipse that, you know, a number of things were going to happen. I even saw an article that linked, you know, increased terrorism in Europe to the eclipse in the U.S., which I thought was kind of silly. But it seems that most of the, or all of the, what would you call them, doom predictions for this eclipse did not materialize into anything, which was always good to see.
Yeah, and I saw some of those reports or forecasts that people were making based on things that happened in the past. And when you look at the date that they, and the earthquakes, it's big earthquakes, that they quote were part of an eclipse, solar eclipse thing, you'll find that, you know, some of them were several weeks apart and one was a couple of months. And I say, yeah, well, sometimes these things drag on, you know, and the effects don't become immediately apparent. So therefore, we're going to say that they occur because of the eclipse. That's just not strong science. So, but having said that, if there had been areas underneath the shadow of the eclipse, if there had been areas where earthquakes were on the verge of occurring, then the added gravitational pressure of the moon and the sun may have just been enough to increase the what they call the moon tide in the land to trigger that earthquake, but I didn't see it. So, but we do have moonquakes, things that as the moon waxes and wanes, it does tend to trigger certain areas where earthquakes are already about to happen anyway. It just kind of pushes them over the edge. So, you just got to kind of watch the data and be a little bit careful about getting too excited, you know, because it's not necessary. My son Jeff over in Louisiana sent me a link to an article, which is down in slide 44, third row down. It says Southern Louisiana actually looks more like this. And if you click on that, you can see on the picture, you can see a big picture of the image showing the true outline of Louisiana before the coastline started receding, going back up toward the north of Louisiana. So technically out in the ocean offshore, that's Louisiana from the original Louisiana Purchase. But if you click on the text underneath, that'll take you to the article. And it says it's in Business Insider. And there's a video to explain it. But every map of Louisiana is a lie. What it really looks like should scare you, meaning that the coastal waters are encroaching further and further north in Louisiana, you know, because of the poor planning, I think, mainly is what it's showing in the various cities there, which don't build dikes and things like that to keep the sand and the land of Louisiana from washing out to sea and eroding down. But look at that video. You'll find it quite interesting. And, of course, we've got the Mississippi River going off to the east of that. So you can see that this is erosion due to poor planning by city planners and state planners. And they've lost that much surface area in Louisiana. So have a look at that that map and later on, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I just looked at it. It says Louisiana lost 1,900 miles since 1934, I believe it was.
That's recent, isn't it?
Yeah, that is recent. Pretty interesting.
Yeah. Of course, my son lives over in Louisiana, so, but up in the north part, so I suppose that's personal of interest to him, you know. That, where is my state going, you know, into the ocean, into the Gulf? Hey, speaking of, you know, geology and things happening, go on down to images 41 and 42. Now go to 42 first and just click on the image, and you'll see that this image is showing the rise of the land in Yellowstone Park and right up to the northwest where recent earthquakes were, you know, that 1,000 or so earthquakes happened. What they don't show is massive elevation up into the out of the Yellowstone Park in the upper left there, but we do have some quakes occurring up there outside the park itself. This is the major thing of interest, however, because in the past, if you look at the caldera boundary there, where it says caldera boundary, you'll see that we've got a rise of 2 to 3 inches of this area over the last year or so, and it's continuing to rise. So what is doing it? You look at the Norris Geyser Basin, and you see that it's certainly has been over the last million and a half years or so by their time. And at the lower left part of it was the first major eruption. Then two other eruptions occurred as time passed up to the point where you're at the kind of northeast corner of the caldera boundary 600,000 years ago. Now, the interesting point is that the eruptions have moved up along that caldera boundary, but that does not mean that the old eruption sites can't erupt again. And that's, this map tells us that. It shows the rise in the landform there. All of them are rising. You know, the Norris Geyser Basin and the whole caldera, at least the first and the last eruptions. And the first one, which is lower left of that, it seems to be rising faster than those up at the northeast, northeast so corner.
What is that, magnum movement, heat? What is causing the rise of the...
What is causing that, you wonder? Well, let's go... And first of all, well, all right, we'll go over to image 41. I click on the picture of image 41, and this is off a YouTube thing from the Smithsonian Channel, and you'll see a little green outline in the, you know, the upper left corner of the state there, the Yellowstone Park boundary. And you'll see that there are little reds and blues and things there. That's showing the magma chambers underneath and old eruptions. And you can hardly see it because it's so small. But if you look underneath that, there's this kind of yellowy-orange thing hanging down into the interior of the Earth. That thing is 450 miles deep. And it is what is pushing up the magma chambers, which we thought were pretty big, the two that are there now. But this is the source of the uprise. And it's solid rock, but it's so superheated that it doesn't take very much for it to go liquid and become magma and start to, in fact, it's already started at the very top of it, starting to fill the magma chambers, you know, several centimeters, I think it is, or inches, I forget how they measure it, 2 or 3 inches per year, and it's pumping up into the lower big chamber of magma that they recently discovered. Well, this is part of that discovery. Now, if you go back to the slide 41, down to the text and push on that, that'll take you over to a video discussion of it, about 3.5 minutes, in 3D rotation showing, you know, where the where the magma chambers are under the Yellowstone Park area. And then it goes into a discussion of the great deep 450-mile chamber that is pushing all this stuff up. Some pretty good graphics in there and animations and things showing, and some actual photos. And I think if you see that, you won't be quite as content to say Yellowstone's going away. It's okay. It's time, and things like this would be perhaps a greater, a clearer present danger than, say, an asteroid impact or meteor impact that would take out a city. This is what the article that goes with it, or the text, says. So that would be worth looking at just to see what's causing this activity. Interestingly, that foot, that 450-mile deep potential liquid magma chamber, is stretching over into Idaho. It may be part of the thing that's pushing the swarms we're seeing over there and into Montana. Back over to image 42, Holly told me about something, and I started looking into it, about NASA making this very ambitious plan to save Earth from this super volcano there at Yellowstone. And you can click and read the article. It's a BBC article, but quoting, you know, NASA's discussion on it. And NASA has been analyzing the possibility of cooling the magma chamber so it doesn't grow any bigger, freezing it, in essence, over a period of years. Actually, a period of probably 100 years. They want to pump water into the caldera, down into the magma chamber, and start cooling it off so that the heat is released. It's cooled down. It makes steam that shoots up through the cracks and the rock formations and escapes. But then they thought, well, okay, as I did too at NASA, they said, you know, doing this might be problematic because it might cause the dome to fracture and make a massive steam eruption volcano, which would be even worse than just let it go the way it is. So then they thought, well, okay, maybe we can dig down underneath the magma chamber, like 10 kilometers deep, and pipe water in there underneath the caldera so that it starts to cool from the bottom instead of the top, and we won't have a lid that could fracture and, blow up. We want to stop the expansion from the bottom. But all of these things are problematic, you know, because anything could go wrong, and they're aware of that. 60 to 70% of the heat that's generated underneath Yellowstone, does leak through the surrounding formations and steam and, like Old Faithful, stuff like that. That does get away, but there's that other 30% of the heat that's trapped down there, keeping it all molten. And in that big 450-mile deep chamber, or I guess it's a cooled magma, it's not really that cool. As soon as it gets a place to go, it melts and goes into the second or the lower chamber of magma that's already been detected. So anyway, read that article.
The government or anybody think that they could act? Who in their right minds would try to cool off a supervolcano?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's trying to justify their existence or something. I mean, they're estimating it'll be $3.5 billion cost to do that. And a lot of people would argue, well, okay, why are we doing that and wasting the water that's so precious? You're going to be pumping down into there. We need that to drink and to irrigate, and you're going to be pumping it all down in there on a bet that you can stop Yellowstone. The fact that they're even suggesting such a project tells you they're worried about it, doesn't it?
That, or they're just very arrogant and don't care how they spend other people's money. It's just crazy to me what these people think they can do, cooling down volcanoes, blocking out the sun with chemtrails. I mean, it's never ending.
It is, and there have been alternate thoughts from them saying, look, by drilling down like that and pumping that water down there, we can take the steam and let it escape into our turbines, and we can get electricity while we're cooling down Yellowstone, which sounds good as long as it doesn't cause a strange rupture down there, because the details of the cavities and formations and tunnels down there are not really clear as far as I know, and they could break into an area which they didn't expect, and of course then the eruption would occur. But if it doesn't, they say they could get something like 10 cents per kilowatt hour of electricity, which is pretty really cheap, while they pump down 3 gigawatts of water down here, release 3 gigawatts of heat that's not being released currently by pumping water down there. A number of these things sound really good if you're sure you can control all the surrounding fractures and formations where you're cooling it to get the steam out to drive your turbine. I don't think it's totally arrogant, but it's a way out there type suggestion, and for NASA to do it, it's kind of ambitious, just as the title says, NASA's ambitious plan to save Earth from a supervolcano. And they're worried about that one, because it'll throw up clouds of dust that could produce a nuclear winter for 2 or 3 years, and all crop growth would stop. A lot of places would be covered in ash. It'd be dangerous to fly. A lot of flights would have to stop because of the kind of glass, silicon dioxide crystals that will form in the atmosphere and hurt jet engines and stuff like that. So they're worried about that one, and we've got one down in the North Island of New Zealand that's just as big, if not bigger. And, the Chinese, I've talked about this before, the Chinese astronomers back at around 200 A.D. or so, when that one erupted down there at Lake Taupo, it's a caldera, as big as Yellowstone. It caused 2 or 3 days of darkness. They couldn't figure out why, but then years of cool winters and impacted growth. Fortunately, it was in the southern hemisphere, so the spread of it took a while to get up in the northern hemisphere across the equatorial wind. Otherwise, we would have seen massive famines, which would have hit like in Europe and India and places like that. So it may have been part of the cause in the past of that. But, one super volcano being controlled by computers and stuff in, wherever they're tied into now, I think it's in the one in Utah, the government facility there. That's only taking care of that threat, not the one down in North Island. And they just don't have the resources in North Island any other of them could cause the planet a lot of problems. But that's only part of the problem. The sun, various other things, and an asteroid impact, all these things are clear and present dangers. And if you'll put news to the prophecies in the book of Revelation, you can see that this is only one of the problems we're facing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. moving forward, Stan, you got to get into this. The image 46 and 47. Egyptian sphinx with lion's body and woman's head. Greek sphinx with woman's head and lion's body. So you have these two different areas of the world, Egypt and Greece, and you have the same or similar type statues. Ancient.
That is interesting. It's something that I've been aware of for a number of years, having read some of the old biblical scholars' analyses of the zodiac, you know, where you have the 12 star signs up there, or 12 constellations, really, because Israel followed those constellations and their meanings and their position as part of the signs in the heavens given to man to tell the story of what would happen from the birth of the Messiah until he returned as the king. And I started looking into it here again the last couple of weeks, just as curiosity, and I found a couple of places that had drawings and some photographs, mainly drawings that were made over the last 100-150 years by people visiting the Sphinx, and they recorded what it looked like at those times before the nose had been knocked off and or dropped off or whatever. And they've looked at the thing saying it could have been the head of a woman, which would have been Virgo, and the body of a lion, which would have returned to the king, her son. It closed the constellations, the zodiac, it closed by having the beginning of her and the end with the Messiah returning as the ruling king. Now, Greeks, of course, they did it for some female goddess and a lion's body, but in essence, they're both, you know, talking about an event that is written in the stars. If you look at image 45 down there, just the click on the image of that, you will see the zodiac, the constellations, not astrology, but astronomy, in picture form in the Beit Alpha Synagogue, which was a Roman Byzantine-type village in Israel. I've actually been up there and looked at this. And you can see how they thought it was important enough to put it in there. Now, the ancient Jewish people in that area looked at these 12 signs as representing the 12 tribes, and they put it on the bottom of the synagogue, which was obviously after the time that Jesus died, because they didn't have synagogues before that, no need for them. They had a temple. And you can click on the article 40, slide 46, the Egyptian Sphinx, and it'll take you to the riddle of the Sphinx, where they address the sort of zodiac stroke myth connection, where they talk about in essence a map showing that Jesus' mother would be the virgin, the woman, and then to cycle through all the other constellations, ending up with the return of the king, Leo. So you can read that on your own time there. That's just one article on it. And then, of course, in Greek mythology, if you click the text underneath slide 47, it will tell you about the Greeks and how they made their Sphinx. And that is interesting. And you get to read a whole bunch in slide 45, you click on the text, about this Beit Alpha location up in the northern part of Israel. It's fairly close to the Megiddo Plain, but it's up the north. And they show the digs, and they show what the synagogue looked like. It was quite a fancy place. And some interior shots showing close-ups of that zodiac and things around the side, which, you know, drawings, but they're all in, like, mosaic tile. It's a beautiful bit of work. Anyway, it shows rituals and patterns and stuff. It must have been a quite wealthy community. They were an agricultural community, but this is something to go see if you ever get to northern Israel before the world falls apart.
Okay, that's pretty interesting, Stan. Especially,
I find weird
image
stuff
45.
Here and there.
Yeah.
Image, yeah. you go down to the Detect in Image 45, you'll see a lot of other photos taken inside that, and it's just really quite intriguing. People don't think about, you know, Hebrews, you know, Jewish people having a synagogue with the star signs in it. They think, oh, that's astrology and that kind of stuff, but it really was totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah. Speaking of signs.
We're up against the break. Stan, hold that thought. You're listening to Stan Deo on this edition of the Hagman Report. StanDeo.com is his website. And if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesday with Stan. Glad he's back. Back in the saddle. That's great. Great. Check his website out, StanDeo.com. Stay right where you're at. Give us 3 minutes. Network break.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely. Erickson.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman Report family, MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow, it's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changelessonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this final hour of the Hagman Report on this Tuesday. Today is the 22nd of August, 2017. Stan Deo is our guest. StanDeo.com is the website. Make sure you go there, bookmark StanDeo.com, as well as check out the show images page that he puts together each and every Tuesday that he comes on the show. Stan, where do you want to go from here?
Well, during the break, I got an email from one of your listeners. We'll just call him George. And thank you, George. I've emailed you back. He was giving me some of the stats on the triggering of earthquakes. Most of the six-plus earthquakes have occurred 3 to 5 days after the full moon and, to a lesser extent, after the new moon. And if you go online to Google or Bing or something like that and type in lunar land tide, you'll see that it does address the problem of the sun's gravitational field and the moon's gravitational field aligning. And normally, lunar tides from gravity of the moon and its position around the Earth may cause a bulge of up to about a meter, about a little over a yard, rise in the land and the ocean. But people don't think about lunar tides in the land, but this bulge follows the path of the moon at its close points around the Earth, and at its far points at the farthest part of its orbit from the surface. Both things can do something to the crust with the change, either stronger or less, in the gravitational field between it and the Earth at that point. So look it up. There are a number of articles in Wikipedia and some very learned Scientific American type articles in there. So thank you for that, George. Earth tides are really quite interesting, and the Wikipedia article has some very nice color images showing the pull, the vertical displacement of the surface of the Earth as the moon passes at its close point. So, bearing that in mind, the eclipse, why people were kind of concerned about it, and still may be concerned about it, is that during that alignment period, you have the added pull on the Earth's surface of the moon and the sun in alignment. So, that does put extra force on it. If it doesn't happen, like in the last 24 hours, according to the stats, we might have to look at a week to 2 weeks, as I said before we see any other triggers that occur after that. I don't know why, and I don't know, whether George knew or knows. He might email me later and tell me why this is delayed like that, but that's the way the stats are. And a number of people have tried to predict earthquakes based on the lunar tides and the total solar eclipse tides as well. We'll keep an eye on it, and certainly could be interesting.
Okay.
Now, there's another thing kind of fits into prophecy in slide 48. Now, the slide you look at says, Smart Dubai, towards becoming the happiest city on Earth. And if you click on the picture, it shows you a sample of what you would see under this new Smart Dubai dashboard or an app. And they are putting everything that's happening in Dubai into this database there so that people can look for projects and how far they are from being completed. They can look at how many square feet of solar power their own roof could supply and get a kickback of power bill from the Dubai government. All kinds of things. I mean, this is just, if you look at this picture, you'll see that there's projects, events, places, and dimensions of places. This is probably the most advanced smart city that's been developed so far. But where this is heading is toward a cashless society, so that everybody is locked in on this. Their position, where they are in town, and their buying and selling is done by a personal ID, probably a biometric type signature. Now, the reason this caught my attention is if you click down onto the text, 48 Smart Dubai, you get to the website on LinkedIn, which is put up showing a video of the presentation of this system to the Dubai government. And it's being presented, if you go down toward, where's the video? Is it here? Somewhere on that page, you click to get the live video link of this lecture that was delivered by Esri, which was started by a guy named Jack Donjerman.
Now, it's at the very bottom of the article, Stan. At the very bottom is the video.
Yeah, at the bottom of the page. Now, Jack is there shown turning the system over to the Dubai representative there. Now, it's interesting because in my first book on the Finding of Atlantis and the Garden of Eden in 1999, Mercator Scrolls, you know, Volume 1. And I needed to have some 3D images of the Middle East made. At that time, these were very difficult things to get. There wasn't any Google Earth, that kind of stuff. There was only Jack and his team. Now, his company's called Esri, E-S-R-I. And Jack started it down there in Perth in 1977 when I was down there. So I got to have the advantage of all the databases they had of the world at that time, which included topographic maps that they could make 3D viewpoints all around Saudi Arabia, which I needed to find the Pillars of Hercules. Anyway, Jack, his last name, his real last name is Dajerman, which in French means world danger, which is rather prophetic in itself, because what his company does and has done for some time since then is compile all kinds of statistics, whether it be money, population density, population motility, mobility from this place to that, earthquakes, volcanoes, anything you can think of that can be applied over a geographic space on the planet, they have put into their database, and you can apply it to your city for projects or whatever, long-term planning for water, for electricity, all kinds of stuff. It's just, it's better than Google Earth in that it just applies so many other factors and stats to a piece of dirt on the Earth, or to a piece of Earth, sea as well. I mean, it does the whole Magilla. Now, anyway, I found it interesting, as I said, because Jack and his team helped me write or make the images for the Vindicator Scrolls book. And now, of course, Jack personally is worth $3 or $4 billion and is all over the world with his products. And this most current one is a lead up to the very, very smart cities, which will keep an eye on you and all kinds of stuff. That's one of the things that can be applied to the geography, is where people are, how much they make, how much heat they're producing in their home. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And, ideally, I think this is a great idea to help manage and plan cities and agricultural projects and things like that. The big problem is that it's leading to a world government run by people that are not like Jesus, that they aren't, the Creator's son, the Creator that created the whole world and the universe that we live in. And it means men, and mankind is fallible, whether it be failing health or dementia or whatever. People in charge of a global government are eventually going to abuse the power that this gives them, but not Jesus, obviously. So that's my particular interest in this Dubai smart city thing. Israel has a few smart cities they set up, but they're not anywhere like this. Not yet, anyway. They're just cashless society thing.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what the goals of these things are, is to move towards a cashless society. And once, everything's under the Internet of Things, and we've seen it in places like Canada and I believe Sweden too, that, you have all your infrastructure hooked up online where it can be monitored, what temperature you set your thermostat at, what lights you use, when you use them. Then you can have the government come in and say, well, you can only put your air conditioning on to 76 today. Because, we're going to do it for you. We're going to control. You're losing all control of everything, including your ability to purchase things, especially when they move away from the cash. And that's always a big red flag in my book. And we've seen this done beta tests throughout Europe, where they have basically moved to 90 to 95% cashless.
Yeah, Joe's been really researching the heck out of this, Dan, and it's coming quicker than...
It is. And speaking of Satan and the world government, in the last couple of weeks, I've also taken an interest in why every culture in the world has some kind of a dragon in their history. If you look at slide 36, these are just a couple of dragons. But if you click on the article, it takes you to the discussion of these different cultures and the dragons and what they mean. For instance, a three-clawed dragon is what Japan usually draw their dragons, with three claws. There was, I think it might have been the European dragon. They had wings on theirs instead of just a serpent with legs and a tail. But they were all dragons, like dinosaur-type beings that shot out fire and either flew or were big. And I guess they could have been like some of these beetles we've seen that can mix two chemicals to make fire come out of their symbolism. Three claws is kind of okay. You can draw that on your vest if you were a knight in Europe when they were talking about the dragons. But a four claw and a five claw are reserved for rulers, kings, you know, dictators. The big power structure had to have their heraldry, their dragons have four or five claws. And at one time, if you had a four-clawed thing on your flag, your emblem, your pendant for your castle, or you know, for your knight or whatever, that was instant death. If they caught you, they'd kill you for wearing a four-clawed dragon image on your clothing or on your standard. I just, you know, I'm entranced with this because all these cultures have dragons in them. And of course, the Jewish and Christian culture certainly has that. Why? You know, why do they all pick this reptilian snake-like serpent? And they're not all Christian nations. You see what I'm saying? Or Hebrew nations.
Oh, yeah. And Stan, with one thing that was interesting about the eclipse is I've read a number of articles before Monday on the different culture interpretation of the eclipse. And many ancient cultures believed the eclipse was a dragon swallowing or attempting to swallow the sun, and it reinforces the the mythology of the dragon creature, and it makes you wonder what makes these cultures not only get into the mythology of dragons, but to make statues and different things about this creature. It's very interesting, and it does tie in prophetically and scripturally with what you were just saying.
You know, I thought about down in South America, I think it was over in Peru or in that region somewhere, where they found a bunch of stone carved toys for children that were hundreds of years old, you know, like Aztec type time, or maybe even before that. And but these children's toys were showing the children, like dolls, playing with dinosaurs or walking beside them. And these were really good representations in stone of what dinosaurs look like. So you think, well, okay, so what? Well, the European world, the Western world, didn't even know about dinosaurs or bones of dinosaurs until the late 1800s. And at first they thought, the first bone they thought was a giant, you know, a giant person. But it turned out to be a bone of what became the terrible lizards, you know, the dinosaurs. And so how did these people in South America carve these toys unless they were living dinosaurs in that time, which is like in the last 2,000 years? So even before that, did the Chinese and the other cultures see or have written records or drawings of these dragon-like creatures that were real? Whether they breathed out fire or not, I don't know, but they could fly. We know that, but actually, you know, there are certain types of dinosaurs that could fly. And before the flood, they could fly because of the density of the atmosphere. The Earth, I tell you, was about 25% smaller in diameter than it is now, and gravity was about a little over one and a half times stronger than it is now. So the atmosphere was thicker, and these heavier dinosaur birds could fly with their leather wings. They were pushing against a very dense air, and so they could get up there and fly easier than they could today, which is probably one of the reasons, if we were ever to clone, from tissue that's found to be alive, if we were ever to clone a flying dinosaur again, it wouldn't get off the ground because the air is too thin and the oxygen is too thin as well. It was all that was thicker and more dense before the flood, before the Earth expanded to its current diameter. Anyway, I go down these rabbit holes every now and then trying to put it all together, but there has to be something that links all these diverse cultures to this dragon image.
Yeah, and I'm sure there is, and it's the answer is probably staring us right in the face.
And again, just to reiterate, kind of, but it's all royalty, right? The dragon isn't the dragon part of the royal.
Well, look at the heraldry in British heraldry. They've got the dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a number of the royal houses of Europe, dragons. It's there. And if you go to Japan and look at their history, China's history, the dragons are there, and they're thought to be, symbols being that came to the earth and gave them knowledge. Satan. So, you know, it's like, if you go back to the story about the Garden of Eden, and Satan tempts Eve, and she takes the apple and bites and all that kind of stuff. Well, okay, his punishment was to be cast on the ground on his belly, you know, like a snake. Well, that's a reptile. And if you look at the Chinese dragon, it's more like a snake reptile than one with wings that we see in other cultures. The wings just may indicate that it ascended into the heavens or can fly. And we know that God has relegated Satan to his domain, is the prince of the air. You know, that's his prince, that's his occupation now, is to be the prince of the air. Wing, you see.
Just yeah.
Strange stuff.
Well, going back to this, in that article you post there, the article that you get to from clicking on your website really goes through, I like the comparative mythology that it goes through. It talks about, you know, all these different cultures from the Sumerian culture all the way up to, you know, the 1400s in Britain, and how these different cultures...
Yeah, it goes all the way back to Gilgamesh.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Wow.
I find this stuff fascinating to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a long read, but by golly, it's interesting. It, and all the pictures and stuff and the reasons and the, you know.
And that's why we bookmark standout.com and go to visit all the sections of his website. Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah, and in the time I've kind of been recuperating here, I've been doing more research with my team here about this energy. Segue, it's not there, but it's the next slide over, two slides over, slide 34. We have found that we needed to have a crystal of a compound that we had to import in from China, because we couldn't find the crystalline form here in the United States, because it's usually in a powdered form, but we need a natural crystal form of this compound, and we're going to be polishing it into little cubes and slices. Once we find the polarity of it, which way the lattice goes. But it's a magic little crystal that allows us, it's not magic really, but it's a really nifty little thing that can take the vibrations that we're talking about in the atmosphere for the Moray energy device, same thing he used, but he didn't understand how it worked, convert those into electricity. We're not talking about a radio antenna or things like that. We've got a system set up to get this energy out of the atmosphere from the solar wind and from the 3,600 lightning strikes that occur every minute on the planet somewhere. They all shock the atmosphere in a way that we can trap. And so we're really encouraged by this. I've got my crystals here, and my other partner that got them in for us, he's got them over there, and we've got a number of things we're putting together now to test the capture and conversion. But I did find out in the process, it's kind of like what science calls a piezoelectric crystal, which you can vibrate and it makes electricity. But you'll find most of the textbooks say this is the effect we've observed in these materials like sugar and various other crystals like quartz, silicon oxide. When you fracture them, they produce electricity. But we don't know why. We're not sure of the mechanism yet. And we found another application of the mechanism, which will allow us to hopefully give power to a lot of people very simply and very safely, by using this and the grab system we're using to get out of the atmosphere. We've been putting together stuff from as far back as Nikola Tesla and also President Trump's uncle, John Trump. And you can see some of the stuff. You can see part of our lab if you go to our GoFundMe project. Go to standao.com, scroll down about half the page, maybe even a third of the page, and you'll see, you know, a picture of myself and part of the patent that I applied for. And a link to our, you just click on, you take it to our GoFundMe page, and there's a way you can click on updates, and there'll be five updates in there, and you can look at the last two or three, and you can see some of the pictures inside our lab, the things we're messing with, and the antenna, main antenna. So we're getting there, guys. We're close.
Well, that's awesome, Stan, and I hope you reach your goal much sooner than later.
Well,
because I believe it was.
Is that your antenna? I mean, is that yours?
No, it's over at the other location we've got in Kansas.
Okay.
Out in the middle of nowhere. My antenna is smaller, but because it'd be out of sight.
Interesting.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Stan, I want to go here. I know a number of our listeners are very interested in the September 23rd, 2017 planetary alignment. And I see on image 43, you have a lecture. Somebody gives a lecture, I think it's a pastor, on the date there. And then you also have, back to the eclipse, Pastor Mark Biltz goes into more detail about the historical and biblical significance of the eclipse. That's image 35. Did you watch
37, 38, and 39? Those are all on that as well. The text underneath of each of them will go to the same location, but the pictures are from that location, showing, you know, the importance of not only the stars that form the Virgo constellation, the Virgin, and Leo, which is nine of them, but the three planets, the inner planets, Mercury, Mars, and Venus, which, you know, it's like been 5,900 years since we had that close of an alignment of these things in the sky and in these constellations. And also, something that I wasn't aware of until this report here, is Comet 67P, which will be right next to the moon, and they address that in these images and in the text about the importance of that comet moving, you know, next to the moon at that period of time. I'd never even seen that was a possibility. And so if you look on those things, Jupiter is in this time period circles around near Virgo in the womb area instead of just moving out of the picture. Jupiter, being, you know, the first of the big gas giant planets, moves around the Virgo formation. You can see the spiral if you go to, go to image 38. And then, of course, 39 gives you another shot of that for different reasons over Israel. Just an incredible bit of information. There's so much information coming out about the 23rd of this month and the signs in the heavens coming from all these guys analyzing the scriptures and then astronomy. This is not astrology. People have to get that through. This is signs in the heavens that God has put there for us to know where we are in time and when to look forward to it. And Jesus has said that he's going to deliver the bride, the church, who are looking for him, the five wise virgins who got their faith, their candle lit, and are waiting for his return. Not like the five foolish that run out of faith and I'm going to go back to church. We're going to have a picnic this week. It's those of us who know he's coming, looking up for his coming. We are going to be delivered. We're going to be kept from the time of the judgment and the tribulation. And if America's being judged pretty soon, right now, I can feel it already happening to us, then I think the rapture, I could be wrong, but I think the rapture is sometime this year or early next year.
Wow.
Could be wrong. Okay. Could be wrong, guys. I know that there are different viewpoints on it.
But yeah, you know, it's honestly, the way I feel about it, Stan, is we can have an intellectual discussion about it. I think you're right. I mean, the signs in the heavens were placed there by God. God put them there. We're supposed to be able to use our intellect to interpret them. We can disagree on dates, times, and all that stuff. But who cares? I mean, honestly, I mean, when I say who cares, I mean, who cares about, in the end, we're still on the same team. We're still going for the same end result.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to change anything. It's just the way it is. But I find it fascinating. Now I'm going to ask you before the program ends. There was a close encounter, or has it happened yet? An asteroid, like coming real close to the Earth?
Oh, it came and went, I think. Wasn't it?
Came and went?
On the 23rd. It might be in the next couple of days. I think it is. It was
supposed
to come.
I'm not sure. All I know is people were kind of saying, man, it's real, really close to the Earth. And I think last time you were on, you were talking about it.
I think it is late this month. Let me just check here real quickly here. Perseid shower is part of that. What's the date? The date? I'm pretty sure it was at the end of August 23rd to Wednesday, August 23rd, meteor shower. I don't know. NASA wanted to. It was one that came in so close. It was in the right orbits. We've got in the high orbits here, and NASA was going to test their deflection technology, you know, go up to the asteroid and just deflect it a bit to see if they can move it, and if they can, then how much mass do they need to move the bigger ones to, so they don't hit the Earth. And I remember talking about it in the show, thinking, gee, this is dumb. What if they make a mistake and it's that close to the Earth that it collides with us?
Yeah, I mean, what could really possibly go wrong? You know, seriously.
Oh, well, of course not. Of course not. Of course not.
Oh, my word. Yeah.
As I say, I'm trying to find out here. I wonder what did they call it a meteor or an asteroid? I think an asteroid.
A big hunk of something. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm searching while we're talking here.
Yeah.
Here it is. It's okay. In NASA JPL. Large asteroid to safely pass Earth on the September the 1st. They are testing their detection and tracking network with that, and also their deflection network, I'm pretty sure I saw in the article.
All right, yeah, I'm gonna wear my protective bicycle helmet outside on that day. Just
well, aluminum foil has to do, too.
All right.
Okay.
Because my wife makes me wear it inside, you know, bump my head, and I can't afford too many of those knocks, but anyway. All right. Wow. Okay. Good stuff. Good stuff, man.
That is indeed. Well, we've done another week, me boy.
We have. And with you in a better position after all of that. We're glad. We're so thankful for your ongoing recovery. We really are. And we're pleased that you're getting some relief from the pain. So.
Thank you. I am very pleased, too. It's been 2 decades and a bit, and it's really time to it went away, which it did.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Praise God, yeah.
And that's great. And I hope it continues to heal up well and for an even speedier end of your recovery. And thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, my nurse here is telling me that she's keeping an eye on me, so I can't exceed the weight limit of stuff I can lift right now. But, hey, it's only 2 or 3 more weeks, and I can be normal again.
Can't beat that. Stan Deo, standeo.com. Thank you so much, Stan. We're at the very end of the show. You have a great evening, you and Holly both. Folks, we'll be back here tomorrow. Until then, stay safe. God bless. Have a great night.